appointed by the minister as a member of the board, a candidate must submit an affidavit to the minister in which such candidate declares that he or she is eligible for appointment and has not been disqualified. When making the recommendations to the minister, the standing committee should ensure that those persons recommended are eligible and not disqualified. Information on disqualification, such as insolvency, etc., can best be obtained during the interview stage. What we've also done, Chair, is we would respectfully submit to the committee that you ask each member to sign a declaration. We've got it in terms there, so that they just make that you just make sure that they meet the requirements. There will be, let's say, a vetting afterwards, a confirmation of what they declare during the interviews. But it would be, it's advisable that you do ask them those to confirm the information during the interview stage. Eligibility, Chairperson, in order to be eligible, you must be of the age of 25 and higher or older, if I can use that. You must be a citizen of the Republic of South Africa and permanent resident in the Western Cape province, and you must not be disqualified under Section 5. And if we go then to Section 5, it's slide number 9. The following persons are disqualified from being appointed or continuing or acting as members of the board. Anyone who has in the preceding 10 years been convicted of an offence in terms of this act or any similar law. Anyone who is in the preceding 10 years, whether in the Republic or elsewhere, has been convicted of theft, fraud, forgery, or uttering a forgery document, a perjury, or any offence under the Corruption Act, or the Prevention and Combating of Corruption Activities Act, or any offence of which dishonesty is an element. Disqualification of the board, because Section 5 continue. If it's unrehabilitated insolvency, or person who is subject to any legal disability, anyone who has in the preceding 10 years been removed from any office of trust on account of misconduct or dishonesty, and any political office bearer, such as. And then continue on slide 11. Anyone who, whether personally or through his or her spouse, family member, partner or business associate, has or acquires a direct or indirect financial interest in any liquor business or establishment, has any interest in any business or enterprise that may conflict or interfere with the proper performance of his or her duties as a member of the board or any license issued under this act. Then subsection 2, for the purpose of this section, an indirect financial interest does not include an indirect interest held through any fund or investment in the person holding such interest has no control over the investment decision made in respect of that fund or investment. I can maybe just, as a commercial break, Chair, of course, remember the Public Service Pension Fund is a shareholder in, amongst others, Distell, you understand? So, but that's an example of where the conflict does not exist because the person does not have direct control over the decision to make the investment. King 4, that's the King 4 report, Chair, when they speak about core competencies of the board, it says the board is responsible to ensure the continued success of the entity and is guided by its charter. In this case, the charter would be the Western Cape Liquor Act. It is the link between management and shareholders or stakeholders. Board should inform and approve the company's strategy and satisfy itself that business plans are not incumbent by unexamined risks. In doing so, it identifies key performance and risk areas. The board also ensures that the strategy will result in sustainable outcomes. So, Chairperson, then they give specific recommendation, the ability to read financial reports so that the board can pick up on irregular expenditure or so. They must have that key competency. A reasonable understanding of the charter, which in this case is the Western Cape Liquor Act, exposure to strategic planning, risk management and development of key performance indicators, which is often mentioned as business acumen, ability and willingness to collaborate with key stakeholders, promote ethical conduct and good corporate citizenship, ensure that the performance and interaction is guided by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And then the last one is our interpretation, Chairperson. It's not specifically mentioned in the King Report, but it's also important that the board will be able to maintain a balance between the interests of the community as consumers and as economic active citizens. Last slide, Chairperson. If we look at the advert requirements, specifically as stated both in the Government Gazette as well as in the advert that was placed in the media, that all candidates must have appropriate knowledge or experience in systems and processes of ensuring proper accountability, probability and openness in the conduct of business of an organization. So there we would advise, Chairperson, that previous experience or qualifications relevant to systems of corporate governance should be interpreted by the committee to be experience or qualifications in areas like accounting, business administration, corporate law, and or finance. Having served on a similar board could be considered. Exposure to reading and analyzing of financial statements, corporate reports, and risk registers are a key competency. Ability to maintain balance is required to ensure the sustainability of the Liquor Authority. Willing and able to attend meetings of the board on different times. I think that's one of the concerns of the CEO, that it's often difficult. People that are in full-time employment, becomes difficult to have them attend board meetings. It's something that the board or committee may consider. Appointments should be made with racial and gender sensitivity. That was specifically stated in the advert. Okay, I thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nunn, for putting the presentation together. I'm also very pleased that you're asking for principles, because that's something actually we had discussed earlier and it's read our minds. So thank you very much for including that very question. In this question, would you like to kick off? Okay, so on slide 6, under the composition of the board, it says that one member who has the appropriate knowledge of or experience in dealing with the combating the negative does that person need to apply specifically for that position, or is all the applications are for the board in general? And then how do you ensure that there is at least a mix of candidates who can comply with that particular requirement?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question is on slide 9. On the disqualification from appointments. My question is on anyone who has in the preceding 10 years been convicted. Now my question was on that, on the conviction. Is there a separate form which the people are declaring that they were convicted or what? Or if not so, how are they going to how is the department going to know that that person was convicted? Thank you.
Honorable Lacker. Thank you, Chair. I'm chairing a complaint linked to a question from member Pichana, and perhaps maybe I would like to get some clarity from advocate master as to what would be the best legal advice in an event where somebody has a criminal record and has completed specific form first that is provided, but then there's a feeling that a process was not fair in that there was this exception that was had in terms of completing the form. What would be the legal advice in terms of that?
Thank you, Chair. I have two short questions. The one concerns the possible incumbent or the applicant, the one who's more dealing with the social implications, social pathologies, and other concomitant negative factors that may arise. Whether it should be stipulated that this person, even in his or her application or CV, is a qualified, say, therapist, clinical psychologist, or theologian, or pastoral care, or whatever the case would be, must be specifically stated, and also in terms of success rate, should there be evidence of proven success in this field that we know as a game changer, that this person can strike that balance between the business and the social ills, and in the event of people falling prey to liquor, or can be of assistance in terms of positive intervention, rehabilitation, and also curative measures. That's the one issue. And then secondly, it's right on slide one, in terms of the terms of office. This current board has been elected for a term of 3 years, but there's a rider built into this that the term of office of members cannot exceed 4 years, but they can also serve 2 terms. So if we have, clarity in terms of our interviews that we have to conduct on Tuesday, in terms of the applications that we have, that we can revert to current incumbents if they do a proper and a good job for the sake of sustainability and for the sake of continuity also. As to just remove those people and say, but we have to appoint new people in terms of reappointment. No, not that it's a prerequisite or that it's being forced on us to reappoint, but if we can ascertain that this person is doing good work, why not? Thank you so much.
Okay. Yes, if I can then try and answer some of the questions. I don't know if Mr. Marshall will have to get
quick. Okay, maybe just before my colleague responds.
I
didn't get the second gist of Member Lekker's question. I know it related to the disqualification criteria regarding criminal conviction. And there was a bit of a rider to your question. Could I get the bottom part of that, if you don't mind?
No, my concern is in the event where this person decides to submit a pro forma in respect of the criminal record that he's got, what are the legal implications to that? If by any chance he succeeds to be shortlisted or anything.
So I think the question then is twofold. Is that Mr. Morris has suggested that we use a particular form that would ask the applicants to confirm that they in fact comply and are not disqualified from the criteria. So I assume it would then ask, have you been convicted in the last 10 years, for example? Thank you, that's helpful. Okay, so may I read it?
Yes.
I'm going to read it to the members. Okay. So it's basically a form that goes from A to H, a description, and then it says yes or no. So the person is asked to indicate with a tick whether it's applicable to them or not. So A, anyone who has in the preceding 10 years been convicted of an offence in terms of this Act or any similar law, yes or no. Anyone who in the preceding 10 years, whether in the Republic or elsewhere, has been convicted of theft, fraud, forgery, the uttering of a forged document, perjury or any other offence under the Corruption Act or the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act or any offence of which dishonesty is an element, yes or no. C, an unrehabilitated insolvent or anyone who is subject to any legal disability, yes or no. D, anyone who has in the preceding 10 years been removed from any office of trust on account of misconduct or dishonesty, yes or no. E, any political office bearer, yes or no. F1, anyone who, whether personally or through his or her spouse, family member, partner or business associate, has or acquires a direct or indirect financial interest in any liquor business or establishment, yes or no. F2, Anyone who, whether personally or through whether through his or her spouse, family member, partner, or business associate, has any interest in any business or enterprise that may conflict or interfere with the proper performance of his or her duties as a member of the board or in any license issued under this Act, yes or no? G, have you attained the age of 25 years, yes or no? And H, are you a citizen of the Republic of South Africa and permanently resident in the province, yes or no? So that's then the form. Actually, we can hand this out to the members. So then, if, I mean, I think, and Honourable Lekker, you help me here, if a person maybe doesn't correctly fill out this form, what would be the implications? Or if they don't fill out the form, you know, what would be the legal guidance? Honourable Lekker, help me here, that's the, yeah.
Chair, I think it's fairly straightforward, actually. I notice that this form is titled a questionnaire. One, and two, I also recall that colleague Morris mentioned earlier that a prospective board member will have to submit an affidavit of some sort. I'm not sure whether this will be an attachment or whether this is extracted from an affidavit or whether the affidavit should speak to the content of this questionnaire. If it is an affidavit, surely it is common cause that any willful, wrong, or factually incorrect statements made in affidavit may subject one to criminal proceedings on the basis of perjury. And I would actually suggest that candidates are warned, are in fact informed of that consequence. But my off-the-cuff advice to the members' question is, should there be a misstatement willingly and something of glaring factual incorrectness, that this committee would be quite entitled to lay the necessary criminal charge. That should be the obvious consequence to a deliberate misstatement of factual information.
So just before we proceed, can I just get clarity on at what stage does the affidavit need to be submitted? Is it before they appear for an interview before this committee, or after, once they've made the shortlist, and before they are considered by the minister for appointment? Because that will also then help us.
I'll ask Advocate Gerber from our side also to add, but what we recommend is that you either during the interviews actually ask the people for the answers on those questions, that's why it's a questionnaire, or alternatively we can just change it to say a declaration that everybody will actually go through it and sign it and submit it when you do the interview. But afterwards, once they've done that declaration, after your recommendation, but before appointment, Advocate Gerber will then get a legal binding affidavit from each of them that they have, that the information is correct. We will then, of course, use that information also, depending on access to certain information, for instance, to vet criminal records. So, and of course, if it's then found that they have lied or deliberately misguided the committee, that will then be reported and they will then be disqualified for continued. And then, as they say, the learned colleague that side, you understand, they may expose themselves to prejudice.
Thank you, Mr. Morris and Chairperson. Yes, the Act says, Section 3.7 says, before being appointed a member of the board, the candidate must submit an affidavit to the minister, in which such candidate declares that he or she, A, is eligible for such appointment, and B, is not disqualified from such appointment. So, when you make a recommendation, and before the minister appoints, then he must require that person to make an affidavit before he appoints him. But the thing is also, and that is why we did the questionnaire, because from your CVs that you receive in the nominations, you won't see whether he's insolvent or whether he has a previous conviction. That is why I said in the slide, you can ask him. And those kinds. But for that purpose, we did the questionnaire, so that you can ask all the candidates to complete the questionnaire, and it's only a questionnaire, it's not an affidavit, only a questionnaire. Then I want to draw your attention also to Section 3.8. It says the provincial cabinet or the minister may, in consultation with the standing committee, at any time call for proof to each or his or her satisfaction of the continued eligibility. And Section 4 deals with eligibility, and 4C says not being disqualified. So it covers that. So there can be an inquiry. at any time call for proof of its or his satisfaction of the continued eligibility of any member or prospective member of the board, or undertake or cause to be undertaken any investigation or inquiry in that regard. So this section clearly says if there is any suspicion that he is lying in the questionnaire or whatever, is not telling the truth, you can do an inquiry. You can approach the police and see whether he's got previous convictions, etc. So those things, the Act clearly provides for that. If I can just go back to the, Member Kivido has mentioned, Section 3.1b refers to the one member who has appropriate knowledge of or experience in dealing with the combating of negative and social consequences of the abuse of liquor. It's for you, for the committee, to decide whether this candidate has got sufficient. There's nothing in the Act or regulation that prescribes he must have done this, he must have been involved in that, must have been... The only thing is that section there, and it's for you to decide whether that member, whether he has got sufficient experience in doing this. Currently, there's a reverend. There's a reverend on the... And surely a reverend would get involved with people, etc. So the thing is, that's your... And that's also 6.1a, the appropriate knowledge and experience in the process, etc., etc. It's for you to decide whether that candidate has got sufficient experience. What we did in the presentation is just to give you guidance to assist you in doing that. And I think I've answered this in everything. Thank you.
So directly on that. Okay, go ahead. Thank you, Chair. Having listened to the input given by both the department and Advocate Mustop, now I would like to get an understanding whether with the affidavit as contemplated in the Act, will it be procedurally and legally correct then to actually, instead of writing questionnaire, put declaration? Is it procedurally correct if we do it in that way? Can I get a guidance to that effect?
Chair, our position would be that it's correct, that you actually, because before you then interview the person, you ask the person then just to declare, either by means of question or filling in the form, whether he or she complies with those requirements. Then, like with any other appointment process, there is a deeper vetting taking place once you make it to the shortlist. And that is then where the affidavit and the checks and balances will kick in, which is the responsibility of the minister and acting on your recommendations. Okay, can I continue with the other questions?
Yes. So the members, we'll actually discuss then how we'll proceed with the questionnaire, because we'll probably want to amend it to a declaration and make the questions specific. Have you received a, instead of anyone, to make it specific so the person is declaring for themselves. But we'll discuss that in the next part, as well as the eligibility of the candidate. Thank you, Mr. Morris.
Chairperson, maybe just going back to the content of the Act, where it specifically then differentiates between the six members who clearly, when you read the Act and the King Report, the core skill of any board is to act in the interest of the entity. They must be appropriately qualified and experienced. But then the Act then goes further to make an exception to that rule. So you may have somebody on the board, for instance, that has got no experience of financial reports, that's got no corporate experience, but he or she is then nominated on the board on strength of their ability to look at the social consequences of the board. But I say that, Chair, of course the ideal is that you may have people that are able to do both. You understand? And when you read the King Report saying that any board in any case must act according to the principles, the Bill of Rights, the ethic conduct and so forth. But the Act in this case would say that even a member that has got no corporate exposure but has the complies with the ability then as set out in Section 3.1b can be nominated. I don't know if that's clear enough on that. Then on the question of, I think we've dealt with in terms of the conviction and how that will be best dealt with. I think then the again the term of office, the Act prescribes a two terms, but it also gives the minister the discretion to determine the length of a term not exceeding 4 years. So the previous board was appointed for a term of 3 years. They could have been appointed for 4 years. But our interpretation of the Act is if you serve two terms, even if the minister then decide to appoint you on a one-year term, you can only serve two consecutive terms. You understand? You can't then say, well, I've only served two of the potential 8 years. That is a discretion that's already been executed there. Chairperson, I think just maybe also for the benefit of Advocate Vastorp, or just maybe a question from our side is, if we look at our interpretation of Section 5.1, is that there is no discretion if the person has been convicted, because in some cases you can condone a conviction. But the requirements in the Act here is that it must not be more than 10 years. That's the only prescribed term there. Thank you, Chair.
Advocate Marshall?
I agree, it's quite emphatic and conclusive. That is, it's an objective disqualifying criteria. If there's been a conviction in the previous 10 years, the person is not eligible.
Thank you.
Chair, I agree with that. It is quite correct that if he has been convicted, you cannot condone it or whatever, because if you look at the appointment of liquor licensing tribunal members, Section 17 says the following persons are disqualified from being appointed, continuing or acting as members or substitute members of the liquor licensing tribunal. A, anyone who has in the preceding 10 years been convicted of an offence and sentenced to imprisonment without the option of a fine. Then, unless the board is of the opinion that the offence was of such a nature that it does not imply that the person is unsuitable to hold office. You see, you've got that qualification for legalising tribunal, but not for board members. So if he's got a previous conviction, he's out. And if you can just allow me, if you look for, I think for Member Lekker to help her there, Section 6, 1 and 2, is very clear. Also, a member of the board holds office for such as HOD has mentioned as period, not exceeding 4 years, as the minister may determine at the time of that member's appointment. And then 2, the minister may reappoint a member of the board in the prescribed manner for one other period, not exceeding 4 years. So that's a one other period. That reappointment was already considered here. So these people now are considered as new, if they are appointed now as new appointees, and not, even if they served at the board, they are not reappointed in terms of the Act and the regulation. See, because 2 says the minister may reappoint a member of the board in the prescribed manner for one other period. And if this process now is not reappointment, you've already considered the reappointment, that's over and done now. So you've recommended not to reappoint, and then we had to go through this new process.
For clarity then, I understood that a person may not serve more than 2 terms, but you're saying that that's not correct. They can't be reappointed for a second term, but they can be appointed.
If the applicant can assist me there, in that I interpret Section 6.1 deals with the appointment, 6.2 says the minister may reappoint a member of the board in the prescribed manner. So he was a member of the board now, his term ended. 6.2 says the minister can reappoint a member of the board in the prescribed manner for one other period. And then he talks about it.
So we have to separate, so we had this discussion last year about the reappointments. Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's two different sections. One deals with reappointments and the other one deals with appointments.
Yes.
So what we need to have clear is, can a person serve more than 2 terms?
Yes, they can. The difference now is if the committee recommended to the minister that some of the members be automatically renewed, then they would not have been put through the interviewing process. The appointment would just have carried out over. But now the committee must express an opinion in their letter on the 3rd of October to say, we can still consider a person for a second term, but they must compete equally with all the other nominations, and therefore they have to go through the interviewing process. process, appear before this committee, answer the questions, and then be subjected to your recommendation or not.
So just to be clear, there's a candidate here that would then, if they were successful, serve the third term.
No, they cannot.
That's what I'm asking.
No, they cannot.
Okay, so once you serve two terms, whether it's reappointment or appointment, your duties are done.
Yes.
Okay, clear. Thank you. Covered.
So, the chair, I don't know, we must differentiate between two processes, and I think he agrees with me. Two processes, one is your first appointment, and, or appointment like we're busy now, you, the standing committee is busy now. Say, for instance, a person is serving a term of office, and it ends on the 11th of March. And you can, the minister, it says, section 6.2 says the minister can reappoint. Can reappoint, so that person can be reappointed only for one period. So it means now, if a person is, one of these members have been reappointed on a previous occasion, he served the term previously and he was reappointed and he's now, his term ends at the 11th of March, you can't reappoint him again, as HOD correctly says, you can't reappoint him again. But you've already considered the reappointment, and that's not, no one is going to, is considered now for a reappointment. That's been done already and decided not to do it. So now they are new appointments now. So even if the people have served 2-3 terms previously, they can be appointed now because you're busy with a different process now, not a reappointment.
I may, on that explanation, I may not have a similar interpretation to the section. And I'll motivate it as follows. In the chairperson's question, she says a person may be appointed for one term and then may be reappointed for another term. The only concern with the question, inasmuch as I know what the chairperson means, is that the word term is not used in that section. So what constitutes a term is unclear. Secondly, the word period is in fact used. The problem with that is the word period is not in the definitions. So one will then have to, and this is my submission, have a apart from the textual interpretation, have a contextual interpretation. Having said that, and I like what colleague Morris mentioned earlier, that the purpose and the objectives of King reports are infused in this process. So, if one looks contextually, one would want to infer that the minister in his or her appointment may not want to have a situation where there's one member who hogs the board and there will be continuous appointment on your interpretation, reappointment potential, etc. So one member may then conceivably, on colleague Herbert's interpretation, have multiple appointments. Surely that cannot be the intention. Had it to be the intention, it would have been expressly such. Surely that can't be the intention if one then, as I mentioned earlier, is mindful of the notions and the objectives of the King principles. Having said that, let's look textually. A member of the board holds office for such period, note period, as the minister may determine. But it can't be a period ad infinitum. It's kept for 4 years. Now, within that 4 years, there may be a reappointment, so that potentially a member may have membership for 8 years, potentially. If that is the interpretation, then a prospective candidate may be objectively disqualified. So I would advise that the purpose would be not to have one member serve two periods of 4 years or parts of 4 years, which is contra to what I believe colleague Herber interprets. So potentially 8 years, but less, but never 8 years plus X.
So the reason I ask this is we have an applicant who served 2 terms already, one of...
Two periods,
one of 4 years and one of 3 years. So does that is that person then still eligible to go through this selection process or not? I suppose that is the question.
We must differentiate between a fresh appointment with the process you are busy with now, or a reappointment. A reappointment is his term of office serves on ends on the 11th of March, and he is in reappointment from the 12th of March. So 2 times 4 years, what maximum. So that he can do. If it's about reappointment, if he's currently a member and you want to reappoint him, you can't go after 8 years. You can only reappoint him once. But this is not a reappointment process. This is an appointment process. So whether he has been on a previous occasion, whether there were breaks or not, it doesn't matter. This Act doesn't say you can't be appointed more than twice. It only refers to the reappointment for one other period. A reappointment only refers to the reappointment. It doesn't talk about the other process. So in a period of 15 years, a person can have served 3, but not consecutive periods. 3 or more periods. That's how I interpret. But you can only be reappointed once.
Okay, so that would be because the minister has discretion then to reappoint, whereas appointment, not reappointment, is an open process, so that would be to ensure fairness, I suppose. Yeah. So a person, and the consecutive, can they serve a consecutive term that they're appointed for more than 2 terms? And Honourable Mitchell, I recognise your answer.
Maybe I don't want to belabor the point, but it doesn't make sense to me with respect, because we make a recommendation, so regardless if it's an appointment or reappointment, the fact the day the minister signs the letter, it becomes an appointment. A reappointment if somebody was serving and then coming through to this process with a recommendation. We make a recommendation and a recommendation for appointment. The fact the minister signs makes it a reappointment. So that just doesn't make sense to me. So according to my understanding, if somebody served 2 terms, it's 2 terms.
May I respectfully suggest that you afford the department opportunity to consult with provincial legal services on this as well, and we will then write a letter just to confirm then in very clear terms what is our interpretation then on, as you said, if somebody served 2 terms and they go through the process now, can they serve a third and a fourth and a fourth term? Let's just get that clarity, vet it with legal services. We'll consult with Advocate Marsdorp as well, and then we'll write a letter to you within the next, let's say, 48 hours, say, if possible. Thank you.
So members, can we agree to that? To the letter? Also, we could look into the particulars of the applicant in question, whether there were the reappointments or both were appointments, because we don't have that level of detail to consider as well. Okay. Honourable Lacker?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm not sure if I will be overstepping my boundaries, but noting that Mr. Morris is going to consult with the provincial legal services and get an opinion onto this matter, can we also get an opinion from Advocate Mastock in writing on this thing as well?
Honourable Kivida?
Yes, thank you to slide
11. It's also a disqualification of possible candidates or incumbents. The direct or indirect financial interest, to me, it's a matter of definition. I want to ask politely, and this is just for interest's sake, what is the definition of a liquor business or establishment? What does it entail? Say, for instance, it may be a tavern, it may be a shebeen or whatever the case may be, that's the core critical business of such an entity, I would say, selling liquor. But what happens if the person has an interest in a hotel? Is that being regarded as a liquor business or hospitality entity, accommodation or what? So where do we draw the line? Liquor is being sold in a hotel. We all know that, or B&B. But is that the prime business of a hotel or B&B or any other facility like that? So will that also disqualify the applicant? Thank you.
Are there any final questions in from the members aside from that question from Honourable Kevedo? No? Alright, thank you, Mr. Morris.
I'll ask Dr. Ndunwelwa to respond to that question. Maybe I can also just from our side, Chairperson, we know that historically, if we go back, the board seemed to have been dominated by people involved in the industry, probably because they have an interest and so forth. And part of the provincial strategy of shifting it to this department is then also hoping that we'll have a more balanced view on that. But not taking away from the core of King 4 is to say you can't have members on the board that wishes to close the, you know, that's not the intention. The members of the board ultimately must act in the interest of the organization. Dr. Ndunwelwa.
Thank you, Chair. The answer to the question of the honourable member is situated in Section 5.2 of the Act. It says that for the purposes of this section, an indirect financial interest does not include an indirect interest held through any fund or investment if the person holding such interest has no control over the investment decisions made in respect of that fund or investment. So meaning that the question of direct or indirect interest vests in whether this person has got a decision-making authority on investment made in regard to that business. So if a person is far from that decision-making process, then that person has got a right to be involved in the liquor interest, in my view, Chairs. I don't know whether I've covered the question.
If there are no further questions from the department, we say thank you very much. And to the Liquor Authority, thank you for being here this morning and for answering our questions. We agree that we should have that legal opinion that will assist us for our interviews next week, Tuesday. Members will now consider how we are going to proceed on Tuesday. There are some refreshments outside. Please do help yourselves. Right. The table is closest just out the door. Okay. One to the left is for our colleagues in the committee next door. All right, members. So we've scheduled a full day for interviews next week, Tuesday, the 6th of February. That gives about 20 minutes per candidate. First of all, let's look at the questionnaire. I'd like to propose that we do use this as part of the interview process. If everyone agrees?
Yeah. Okay. Can I just, on a point of procedure, ask, is this meeting, while we're discussing the questions or the process, is it open?
Yes, we're not going to be discussing the questions at this stage, so it remains an open meeting. So on that note, what I'd like to propose is that when we start our meeting next week, Tuesday, and I'd like the committee's input on it, that we will deliberate for about half an hour before we start, and members will be, your homework from today will be to think of good questions to propose in the first section of the meeting. We will then as a committee decide on which questions we're going to pose, and in that particular section I'd like to propose then that we turn off the feed. So that if there are candidates waiting in the lounge or whatever that can see or hear what's happening in the committee, they don't have an unfair advantage over other candidates. The Hansard, however, will continue, and then as soon as we've decided on the questions, we'll then turn the feedback on again. Can we agree to that? Honourable Diana?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think I will slightly differ. I will suggest that the department compile the questions. Bring the question so that it can, because the problem, we are not familiar with the liquor, that's the main thing. Now they can just compile those questions and bring the questions to us so that we can check if those questions are right. Then we can change the questions. In fact, we in the Department of Environmental, the department is always compiling those questions, and then, you know, we are just checking the questions. If we said that, you know, these questions are right, then we are changing the questions.
Honourable Mitchell?
If I may, I understand what Member Dijana is proposing, but my concern is, if I may, is that what if those questions, and I'm not casting aspersions on the department, but I'm just in the interest of fairness for every single candidate, what if it, well, I hate the word leak, but you, do you know what I mean? Like if it gets out before the time, and it's not fair to every, so I would agree that we should we do it that morning.
I also, everything is matter of principle, we are the legislators, we have a responsibility given to us in law to have an interview process, and I don't think it's fair that we outsource that to the department. Last year we did come up with the questions ourselves, and I think that we need to do this work ourselves as a committee and maintain our integrity as the legislature and the responsibilities that we have in that regard. So we can all, the questions, I've got the questions that we had from last year, to just as a reminder of what we had asked. So the first thing is, before we move on, can the committee agree that we will turn off the feed in the beginning section of our committee on Tuesday when we decide what questions we're going to ask the applicants? Okay? All right. And as soon as we've decided that, we'll turn the feed back on again. The Hansard, however, will run throughout the process. That won't be turned off. But just so that, in the interest of fairness, no one's none of the applicants can hear or have an unfair advantage of what the questions might be. Right. Then the next thing is the questions themselves. So last time we had three questions. How many questions would we like to ask applicants? Last time we asked, what do you think are the major challenges of the Western Cape Liquor Authority? What efficiencies or improvements would you contribute to the board? And what would you consider being the main responsibilities of a well-functioning liquor board? Those were the questions we asked last year. So that as a basis then can form some thought into proposing questions for next week's meeting. Last year we ran ahead of schedule, didn't we? And we also had 20 minutes per, we had 15 minutes per candidate. So perhaps what we need to do is look at four questions this time round. Yeah? Yeah. That seems fair? Okay, so we agree, members, to then pose four questions to each candidate. Okay. So it would be three last time, there was 15 minutes. Now we've got 20 minutes per candidate. So if we do four questions, it's 5 minutes per question, which is more than enough.
If we can make an amendment to those three questions, because if somebody can get access to the Hansard, maybe one of the applicants to the Hansard of last year, they might have an advantage over others.
And of course, the questions have to be different. We can't ask the same questions as we did last year. So that's why I'm giving an idea of what we did ask, so that we can then have different questions in the interest of the fairness. Yeah, in minutes it's adopted, we might even have applicants that had gone through that process that would have been asked those questions, so we absolutely have to have different questions. We will also provide you with a scoring sheet with the candidate's number or the applicant's number, and then the four questions. We know they're going to be four questions, and then we can each individually score them based on the answers, and then at the end it will help us to draw up the shortest, which worked quite effectively last time. Okay. Then what I'd like to propose then for this questionnaire is that we change it to become a declaration. And the question is pointed. Have you in the preceding 10 years been convicted of an offence, rather than anyone, you know, it has to be specific to the person with their name and signed. And then what I'd like to motivate is that we send a letter to all the applicants just to inform them that they will be required to complete the declaration, and we include the declaration as an attachment and ask them to submit it at the start of the interview so that we can see immediately whether that person is eligible to proceed or not. what we could also do in the letter is say that if they make the shortlist, they'd be required to submit a sworn affidavit as well, so that they are forewarned of some of the procedural requirements. I think that would be in order. Okay. Are there any other comments about the running of the interviews next week? Then the other thing is, we've all received this grid, which basically summarizes the CVs of the candidates. If I can take you to candidate, or applicant rather, applicant number 8, and applicant number 9, it appears that there are some issues which may make them not eligible to proceed. I'd like to know from members whether at this stage we should interview all the candidates regardless and determine that at the point of the interviews, or whether we should get advice on whether to exclude these two applicants based on their responses to the adverts. 8 and 9. So do we want to consider those criteria now or at the beginning of the interview? So the question is, do we proceed with interviewing them despite a concern of their eligibility? Advocate Marsdorp, what would be your guidance on this? Whether it would be best to consider this now or next week Tuesday?
Chair, the purpose of the committee is to interview all candidates. One. However, you become a candidate if you have not been disqualified beforehand. So one would not want to have a situation where an expectation is created by members, or by prospective candidates rather, prospective appointees, that he or she has now reached the interview stage so that there is a possibility of appointment. One would want to already preemptively shorten the list if someone is objectively disqualified. On that basis, I would suggest that those candidates' qualification or otherwise be discussed here and a resolution be had so that no expectations are created.
Perfect, thank you. We will then take that advice. So then applicant number 8 is the owner of a company that as part of its business does liquor consulting, which would then appear to exclude the applicant from being considered. Advocate Marsdorp, you've got the same grid. So I don't know, to me that seems pretty straightforward. It seems that it would be, could appear to be a conflict. Yeah. Honourable Lekker?
No, I agree, Chair.
I agree, because this would be seen as a conflict of interest. So in essence, we should not be considering this person as one of the candidates that we may interview on the day.
Advocate Marsdorp, would you agree with that assessment?
My initial reaction is, yes, I agree that he has an interest. I also noticed that it says a part of the business of this company is liquor consulting. In other words, he gives advice or strategic guidance to other such entities within the industry. And that would clearly give him a predisposition, if you like. And on that basis, I would suggest that he is objectively disqualified.
Honourable Kivido?
Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair. Direct interest as far as I'm concerned. But if we, I take you to the very last sentence, this whole issue should be cleared by the Standing Committee during the interview process. That's a stipulation. And we are on the process. If we talk about the interview process, are we talking about the interview itself during that process?
So we just got guidance from Advocate Marsdorf before we looked at the candidates, and we agreed that we were going to look at which applicant is not eligible to go to the interview stage. Okay. But I don't know, given that, I don't know if that's any legal requirement placed there or just a statement from the department.
Chair, my reading is that it is a statement by the department. Once the department has given Parliament the handover, as far as the department is concerned, it seems, the interview process starts. This preliminary engagement is to empower the committee to have an informed interview when candidates are assessed. As far as the department is concerned, this is the interview process. And I would read this as merely a guiding statement for the assessment to be done intra these engagements.
And do we need to give the applicant then an opportunity to review that decision?
Chair, this being a administrative tribunal, its decisions are in and of itself reviewable by any Belanghebbende, person of interest.
So then what I would propose then is that we send a letter to this applicant to say that the committee has looked at this person's application and feel that they are not eligible for the reasons that we've just given. However, if they feel that they would like to oppose this, they have an opportunity to do so before Tuesday. Do we do that?
My concern with that approach, Chair, is it almost sounds like an appeal to this committee who made the decision to render the person ineligible. A review would ordinarily be to another forum. It could be to the High Court to overturn a decision by this committee. Because this committee cannot be pondered to be a decision maker and to review its own decision upon a review by a person of interest.
Honourable Mitchell?
Chair, thank you very much. I don't want to take us back. The grid as provided by us, to us, indicated that this applicant is his business is part of legal consulting, but in his application, the applicant writes, since the inception of the Act, I've acted as legal consultant, but terminated the service during December 2016. So the grid is contradictory to the applicant's. So based on the applicant's declaration, I would then suggest that we in fact clarify it in an interview. Because we can't, because it's too contradictory.
What I'd like to then propose is that we then interview all applicants. What I'd like to propose then is that we in fact interview all applicants, and those applicants that we do have a concern about their eligibility, we can then take that up in the interview process, in the interview itself, which would then be a first question.
For
those particular individuals where there is a flag of potential ineligibility. Right? Can we agree to do that instead then? Okay. All right, members, then we will interview, how many do we have? 19. 19 applicants on Tuesday morning. Okay, our meeting starts at 8:30 on Tuesday, not the normal Wednesday start. Right. Are there any final questions or comments from the members? None? Marshall, for your guidance and input this morning. We're very grateful for that. Thank you very much, members, for the discussions, and we will see you then on Tuesday. There are refreshments outside. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.